This is Philip Fisher. Today I'm in East London at the Rehearsal Studios where Matthew Bourne is beginning to put together the tour of Carman. Matthew, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Thank you. Good to be here.
First of all, your work is a real crossover between theatre, dance, ballet and maybe some other genre. How do you classify it?
Well, I suppose the easiest term is dance theatre. It's one of those things that's sort of dogged me throughout my career is what do you call these pieces, you know? And publicists throughout the world now have sort of made attempts to come up with names for what it is I do. The latest one in America and Japan is Dancical, which was Edward Scissorhands, which sort of felt like a musical. It felt like you were watching a musical, had numbers in it, and but obviously no songs, no words. So Dancical seemed to explain to an audience of people that we were playing to, which actually in some places was cities we'd never been to before, and we were going to theatres as part of a Broadway season of musicals mainly. So they needed some sort of definition that sort of made sense to them. And interestingly, about, I guess in some places we went to, 70%, 80% of the audience was sitting there waiting for the first song and just waiting for someone to speak. And of course, when it didn't happen, or it got longer and longer before this, people started to look at each other and like, are they going, is anyone going to sing? But what's great about that is you get the people in and you hopefully you win them over through the evening, so by the end of the evening they've, which they were, all standing on their feet and cheering. But it wasn't what they thought they'd come to see. But how could you explain unless you see it? That's the thing. So I've given up trying to sort of explain or decide what to call it. I'm happy to explain, but I don't know what exactly to call it anymore.
And your background is in dance?
It is and it isn't. I mean, I came to dance very late, so I started dance training when I was 22, and I didn't discover ballet and modern dance till I was 20. You know, before that, my loves were MGM musicals, Julie Andrews films I grew up with, obviously, having been born in 1960. So the first movie I saw was The Sound of Music on my fifth birthday. So I that was the sort of era which I grew up. So I loved movies, theatre, which my parents were into, and so they took me to see quite a lot. From an early-ish age of about 7, 8, 9, I was going to the theatre from that point onwards in London.
In London?
Yeah, I was born in London, born in Hackney. And so that was my background, really. So my storytelling and now is influenced by movies and theatre, really, of that time and since, because those are my first loves. Dance came later and has become something that I love very much, but it's the medium through which I tell stories. And I've never seen any reason why I couldn't incorporate the ways of theatre and movies into my dance productions. So that's where the strange mix sort of arises, really. It's highly theatrical, and I don't see any reason why I can't use any different form of theatre or dance, for that matter. It's not a particular form of dance I use. It's not, you couldn't say it was strictly ballet. It's a mixture of modern dance, ballet, social dance, dancing that people would recognise, tap dancing sometimes, flamenco, different forms of dance, national dancing, anything really.
The current piece that you're taking around Britain is Carman. Do you want to, I'm sure you do want to tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's called The Carman, and obviously it's based on Carmen, the opera. But it's not the story of the opera. It uses the music. It's actually more based on a movie called, or a book, I should say, by James M. Cain called The Postman Always Rings Twice, which is the basis of the setup of the story, but then we start to tell our own story within it. So it doesn't really follow that story, but you'd recognise the situation. People who know the opera would see parallels between some of the characters in the opera, but it really isn't that story. And the reason is it was the first time I'd attempted to do something where I could use a score, like a film score, so I could tell the story first, write the story first, and then fit the music to the story. With the other pieces I've done, or had done up to that point, Nutcracker, Swan Lake, those kind of things, the music is your guide, because the music is written to tell a story in a particular order, then you tell your story with that. This is the other way around. I also wanted to do a thriller, and see if I could do a dance thriller. And of course, with a story you already know, there are no thrills, there's no suspense. So I wanted to invent a story, really, and have twists in it that would surprise people. And so that was the impulse for doing it.
And how long did it take you to put together something like this? Is it a project that takes weeks, months, years?
Well, this current one is a revival of a piece we did. We first did it in 2000 at the Old Vic. And But I'm someone who always meddles in my own work. I'm a constant meddler. And I always think you can do better and improve. So this time, approaching a piece, I love reviving pieces because it gives me a chance to really deconstruct and start from scratch again and work on them again. And there's a whole new generation of dancers to do these roles. So it takes less time because you've not got to work out the whole structure. The story is so... The first time is so important. The rhythm of the whole evening is important. Once you've got those things solved, you can go into the detail more. So a revival like this will take... We're only really rehearsing for 3 weeks before we get on stage. So it's tough work. It's hard work, you know, and there's a lot of people who've, you know, not done this piece before. So not long enough to do masses. But we did do some workshop... work on it a few months ago, so we've really looked at the material and made our changes and things. So, and I've been thinking about it for some time. So, it's always difficult to say how long it takes because often your preparation time is sort of spread out over a period of time, and usually the rehearsal period is the most intense time. But that's obviously you've done a lot of work before that.
Let's talk about some of your other work. I think you've just come back from Russia, where you've been sort of doing a Colts and Newcastle job taking Tchaikovsky there.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I was there last week. I had to, because I'm in rehearsal, I could only go for the opening night. And it was at the... We did Swan Lake, as you say, Tchaikovsky, in Moscow, where it was premiered originally. But we're performing at the Moscow Arts Theatre as part of the Chekhov Festival, and we would open the festival. It's never been to Russia, my version. And so we're in this amazing historical theatre. All Chekhov's plays were premiered.
Stanislavski's theatre.
Yes, Stanislavski's theatre. And the ghosts of all these old actors are... Well, the pictures are on the wall. It's sort of covered in pictures of great Russian actors. And it's a lovely house to play it in, actually, because it's got a large stage but a smallish auditorium, so it's a 900-seater. And Swan Lake very rarely plays venues like this anymore. It plays enormous venues. And for the Russian audience, obviously, they're getting this big show in this small, intimate space where they actually can get more involved in it in many ways, you know, the performances. So it's great. And we're getting a lot of... We actually had a 95-year-old ex Bolshoi ballerina come the other night, and she was blown away by it, apparently. She thought it was wonderful, and she'd danced the role many times, of course, in her career. And a lot of old ex-dancers are coming to see the show, you know, Bolshoi dancers, and so it's wonderful, really. And to take it home there has always been an ambition since we first did it, really. It's scary, but the audiences have been amazing. They've been bravoing and cheering and on their feet every night, throwing flowers at the stage after every performance. I mean, when the Russians love you, they really love you. You know, it's fantastic. So the company are having a ball out there at the moment.
Sounds fantastic. You seem to enjoy subverting media, which is putting yourself at risk, because you'll take much-loved movies and change them into dance pieces. Mm. You'll take classical ballets and make them into something modern. Is that... You like risk taking? Is that a deliberate policy, or is it just the way you work?
It's not really a policy with me at all. It may be viewed as risk taking in some quarters. You know, I've never seen it as such. I just see it as the only way I can do it. And so the stories I'm drawn to, the ballets that I wanted to do, and I've had the chance, the privilege to do, really. I wanted to work with that music. I wanted people to hear that music in a different way, maybe. That was my impulse for doing it, not to go against anything that already existed. I mean, I'm someone who loves the ballet of Swan Lake. I love the movie of Edward Scissorhands. I'm not sort of saying, oh, I can do it better. I just love the material, and I've got a form in which I tell stories, which is very different from the original, and that's what I apply to it, really. And you know, it's totally creative in that sense, because you have to retell the story in a way which is almost inventing it from scratch because of the way you're telling the story. And this is why Tim Burton actually agreed for me to be able to work with Edward Scissorhands, because it was so different in approach from what he had done that he didn't mind another director taking it on board, because it was like, well, I can't do, that's not what I do. And I think if it was like a TV series or a part two, or a, he would never have agreed to it. But because it was a whole different medium, really, he was happy about it. You know?
And that was Dancing with Blades, which was also very brave, or it looked like it.
Yeah, the blades were, they are quite dangerous, I have to say. I mean, they're not obviously real blades, but they are, you know, firm plastic sort of, you know, if you get something, one of those in your eye, or you can get hit by them moving at fast speed, it's not nice, you know. I mean, they're and they do take up an enormous amount of space on stage when someone's dancing with another foot and a bit sort of extension on their hands, you know, so it's they're pretty scary.
The look of pieces seems important to you. I think you've worked with Les Brotherston quite a lot. Mm. And I think the set that we're looking at outside the room that we're in is one of his.
Yes, Les Brotherston. I've done most of my work with him in my company. And he's sort of obviously the, you know, my main collaborator on many shows, and brings a whole world to the productions, which is invaluable. You know, it's sort of, he gives you a playground in which to work. His sets are not, what's the set for the club scene, and what's the set for the garage scene, and what's the set for, you know, things sort of flying in. It's always a set that adapts into things in front of your eyes. And I found, and I think he agrees, was that the audiences love watching sets become things, just by the change of light. And Carman is particularly brilliant for that. The lighting by Chris Davey is another brilliant collaborator to turn this very basic set into many different places and many different feelings and worlds. And it just happens at a flick of a switch almost. So it's fascinating for an audience to watch those things come to life, as well as rather than just, oh, you know, the curtain goes up on another set, you know.
And in this case, rather than bullfighting, it looks kind of Edward Hopper, Midwestern town?
Yeah, small town America, garage diner, small town with people who all know each other very well, and, you know, a stranger arrives in town, and things develop from there. You know, it's one of those stories. What I like about the story is that it sets itself up as a story you think you know. So you're watching it about 20 minutes in, you go, oh, I know this story, I know what's going to happen, I know, I've seen this, you know. And then different things start to happen, and the audience starts to get quite thrown in a way, and quite excited by it, I think, because it's a conventional setup that then turns into something different, which is sort of what I like to do, really, lead people up the garden path a little. I'm a very big fan of Hitchcock. So Hitchcock comes into my thinking quite a lot, and I've always loved his mix of suspense, obviously, which he's famous for, but entertainment, glamour, comedy, all these things you don't think about as Hitchcock things, but they're always there in the movies, you know. Star power. I love creating star roles for people, you know. So I feel I've got a very big link with Hitchcock.
And what about your audiences? Because you kind of have a choice in a way, or maybe you like to draw in lots of different audiences, but it's a mixture of film people, dance people, theatre people, etc. Do you have anyone in mind when you're writing?
Well, not really. I try and please everyone, I think. I sometimes used to think that was a failing, you know, to try and please everyone. Yeah. It's quite hard, you know. But I do try and do that in some ways. I think if I was only playing to a dance audience, we wouldn't survive as a company. You know, the productions have to work for a certain length of time, you know, that we have to play, that's why our seasons are longer. If our audience didn't reach beyond the dance audience, which of course it has, you know, now, we couldn't survive. So I do make it for anyone, really, who's willing to come and give this kind of work a chance, because it often does take that for people. If they think, well, I don't really like dance, or I don't think that's what I like. And they need someone to tell them, usually, a friend, you know, like, I know you don't like this normally, but come and see this. And they're the sort of people I'm looking for in an audience, and I'm bearing in mind when I'm making the work, I believe that you don't have to have read anything before you see it. I don't need people to know anything about dance or the story they're about to see, or to read a scenario. Some people will come in and say, where's the scenario, you know, because they're so used to that with ballet and opera, that you have to have read it beforehand, and I don't agree with that. So I think about the person who's come to see this with an open mind, who just sits there, and the curtain goes up and you tell them a story, and that's the basis on which I tell a story, that the person sitting there knows nothing, and that I want to grab them very early on, and I want to involve them in the first few minutes, and I want to make them laugh in the first few minutes so they've relaxed, and then take them on a journey. And that's my way of working.
It sounds as if it ought to be everyone's way of working.
Well, I think it is many people's way of working. You know, certainly the directors I've worked with, Trevor Nunn, Richard Eyre, Sam Mendes, all those people, that they took in very basic terms in that way. You know, how will the audience know this? Are we clear here? What do we get from this? You have to put yourself in the position of people who have not done all the research that you've done and read and on the background, and, you know, what do they actually get? It's quite difficult to put yourself in that position, and sometimes to sort of not know anything and watch this thing and think, that's not coming across, that's not clear. And in Trevor's case and people like that, it would be like, that word wasn't clear. I don't think we heard what you said there. You know, that kind of thing is so important. I think that's what a director's job is.
You mentioned three theatre directors there, and your work has been shown in theatres as well as opera houses, and goodness knows where else around the world. Do you think that you will ever adapt and go into straight theatre, or you're happy with dance?
I like doing what I'm doing at the moment. I love having a company. It's a privilege to have a company, and where you can do your own work. And very few people have that, you know, to actually think, oh, I'm going to adapt this book, or I'm going to adapt this movie, and to be able to make it happen, you know, I've got this idea. So I sort of intend to do that as my prime thing, really. You know, I would like to direct a play one day, maybe. I love working with actors, and there are a lot of actors I really love, you know, and I always get on very well with actors, and they always seem to respond to what I say to them and to want more, you know. So I feel I could do it, but I would need to have a take on something, you know, a play, and I think, oh, what about if we did it in this way? I'd have to have an idea that got me excited about doing it, because I get sent scripts sometimes, and it's an odd thing, this. Once I read a script, I almost feel like, oh, well, there it is, it's done. I don't read a script and think, oh, how can this be staged? Because so much of my work is about writing the story, developing it with the performers. It's all, I suppose, developed together eventually. And I feel half the work is done. And I sort of enjoy reading it like a book. And then I think, oh, well, that's that then. You know, there it is, this script. And I don't have that sort of imagination. The way my mind works is very different, I think. And words as well, it's not something I deal with enormously. So reading a script, a director would often look at a script and think, oh, this needs to go, that need to, you know, I don't think like that. I need to be there with the performers to feel the thing. So the work, a lot of the work will happen in the rehearsal room.
How difficult is it to have several shows running around the world at the same time?
There's not too many. I mean, I always make it so that I can be there and that I can have an involvement. There's never been a show of mine going on where I'm not involved. Obviously, you know, with the musicals, with Poppins is in London and on Broadway. And I will visit that from time to time if I'm there. But they get taken care of by resident people. But my own company, I never reproduce shows. It's always my company doing them. And people who've worked with me for a long time, you know, it's always the company. And when we toured Edward Scissorhands around the States, a lot of the people that are out of New York were surprised it was the original company. They're so used to getting a touring company. So I always want them to feel special. Even Swan Lake, which has been going for quite some time, it should feel like an event. It shouldn't feel like there's several of them going around, you know.
You mentioned Mary Poppins. I suppose I ought to draw you in on the musicals. Do you want to talk a little bit? That's a sort of a different side to your life in a way.
Yeah, musicals. I've done the ones I really, really wanted to do, and I've never done a musical as a job in a way. They've always been passions, you know, things I couldn't turn down. When I was offered Oliver, I thought, oh yeah, of course, I have to do that. And My Fair Lady, oh, wonderful, you know, what a great thing to be able to do. And same with Poppins. I mean, Cameron first talked to me about it when we were doing Oliver in 94. And he played me one of the songs that George Stiles and Anthony Drew wrote, Practically Perfect, which was fully orchestrated and sung by Claire Moore in his office, you know, and it was virtually the version we ended up with all those years ago. And I said, you know, if ever this happens, please don't forget me, you know, I'll be the tea boy on it. I just want to do it. And so, bless him, he did, you know, involve me when it came about. But we talked about it many times over the years. How's it going? Could it happen? Obviously, it was to do with getting the rights sorted out with Disney, but and coming together like they did. But yeah, they've always been ones. They've always been that passions that I was desperate to do, and so I haven't done very many, and I may do some in the future, but I've got no plans to at the moment. But they are very different in some ways and very much the same in other ways. They're always about telling stories, which is the approach I have. And what you deal with in a musical is lots of different levels of movement skill. You know, so you have your dancers, you have your character people who move well, and you have your actors who don't move so well, or who people with great voices who can't put one foot in front of the other. And you've got all these people you have to sort of mix together and create numbers on different levels of what they can do, which is the skill of a musical musical storytelling, I would say, rather than a dance musical as such. So the approach is different, and also I think with musicals you're almost required in some ways to sort of stop the show a few times, you know, in the evening. Whereas in my own shows, I don't think like that. I think of a story that's told throughout the evening through movement, and it's got a development. It's a different sort of process. Whereas you've got to have your number just before the end of the first half that sends everyone out very happy there, and you've got to have your 11 o'clock number, as they call it, which is usually at about 9:45. it's a different structure. So. But equally fun, and I love doing the musicals because of the collaboration with the people I've had the chance to work with. I've learned so much from the people I've worked with.
And what does the future hold for Matthew Bourne, do you know?
Well, it may sound a bit boring because I haven't really got anything to tell you in some ways. Only that I know that I want to devote the next few years to my company, you know, and really to develop that further, and the international touring that we do and the partners that we have, and reviving Carman and Nutcracker at Christmas. But what I'm doing over the next 18 months, I suppose, is really taking time out to think about what to do next. I feel as I've done a lot of things I've always wanted to do, and now it's the time to think, well, where do I go from here? Do I keep doing shows, you know, in a similar vein, or do I come up with something different, like I did with Play Without Words, you know, something a little bit more experimental? So that's what I'm looking to now, and I'm turning down everything else to be able to concentrate on thinking, because I think I've got to a time in my life where I need to go back to my inspiration a bit and find inspiration a bit, and I've got enough going on to keep me busy. But with new work, I think I need to explore a lot more now.
Matthew Bourne, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.